On this 29th day of June, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path. Text 38, is that on the board? 38? Okay, there's two here, we'll chant the first one. Yato nanabhir Hridayat Urnam Udvamate Mukhat Akashad Goshavan Prano Manasa Sparsharupina Yato nanabhir Hridayat Urnam Udvamate Mukhat Akashad Goshavan Prano
Akashad Goshavan Prano
Manasa Sparsha Rupina Translation. Just as a spider brings forth from its heart its web and emits it through its mouth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the reverberating primeval vital air, comprising all sacred Vedic meters and full of transcendental pleasure. Thus the Lord, from the ethereal sky of his heart, creates the great and limitless Vedic sound by the agency of his mind, which conceives of variegated sounds such as the sparshas. The Vedic sound branches out in thousands of directions, adorned with the different letters expanded from the syllable Om, the consonants, the vowels, the sibilants, and the semivowels. The Veda is then elaborated by many verbal varieties expressed in different meters, each having four more syllables than the previous one. Ultimately, the Lord again withdraws his manifestation of Vedic sound within himself. Purport. Srila Sridharaswami has given an elaborate technical explanation of these three verses, the understanding of which requires extensive linguistic knowledge of the Sanskrit language. The essential point is that transcendental knowledge is expressed through Vedic sound vibration, which is itself a manifestation of the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. Vedic sound emanates from the Supreme Lord and is vibrated to glorify and understand him. The conclusion of all Vedic sound vibration is found in the Bhagavad Gita, wherein the Lord states, Vedaischa sarvair ahameva vedyaha. All Vedic knowledge is simply meant to teach us to know and love God. One who always thinks of Lord Krishna, who becomes the Lord's devotee, and who bows down to and worships the Lord with faith and devotion, chanting his holy name, has certainly achieved a perfect understanding of all that is indicated by the word Veda, or knowledge. Omagyana timaram tasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. This is a very esoteric few verses here. And fortunately, we don't have to know all the details and ins and outs of the Sanskrit alphabet and the sparshas and the different vargas, the groups of letters, to go back to Godhead. But it's fascinating to realize the depth of this knowledge. And this analogy, first of all, of the spider, this is used repeatedly in the Bhagavatam. It's very interesting. The spider is sitting there, and then from itself, it manifests this whole web, which is like the creation. And eventually, it takes that web back, that material, it winds it back inside itself to use again for the next web. So the analogy is that Krishna is there in the spiritual world, like he says in the second canto. Aham eva asam eva agre nanyad yat sarasat param paspashtaraham mireta cha yovishasheta sosmiham. This is the first of the Chatur Shloki, the four key verses of Bhagavatam. I wish I could give you the number of the verse, but look it up. Aham eva asam eva agre. So it's very similar to what Krishna says in the first verse of in the 10th chapter, those essential four verses. Sometimes they're called the Chatur Shloki of Bhagavad Gita. Same idea. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. That everything comes from me. I emanate everything. And in the Bhagavatam verse, he says, and before there was anything, there was me. And after everything is manifested, it's still only me, because it's my energy. And at the end, when nothing is manifest, I'll still be there. So that's the definition of Supreme Absolute Truth, as given in the Vedanta Sutra. Janmad yasya yataha. Janmadi means birth, etc. Creation, maintenance, destruction. That from which is emanating everything, who or which maintains everything, and into which everything emerges at the end of the annihilation. That's the Brahman, that's the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that's the sole subject matter of the Bhagavatam, of the Bhagavad philosophy. So we're part of that Absolute Truth. We as spirit souls are part of it, and so is our body. There's nothing that's not part of the Supreme. And understanding how the energies, because he manifests through the energy, what he's mentioning here is that the energy, everything is manifested through sound. The first, as described, I think, yeah. I personally established the Vedic sound vibration in the form of Omkar within all living entities. And elsewhere it describes the whole creation proceeds from that sound. How it does, we don't know. But in the beginning was the Word, right? And the Word was with God. Same idea in the Bible even, very vaguely. So now, as reverberating primeval vital air. So we can also understand, we can relate to that. If we're going to vibrate anything, right? We have to move air. We have to move air through the vocal cords. We have this machine of the body, which is a crude, replica of our spiritual body, or Krishna's spiritual body also. But there's a means for vibrating, and it involves moving this air, this vital air. So Krishna does that by the primeval vital air comprising all sacred Vedic meters. Now this idea of this is called chanda. This is part of the wonderful creation of the Vedic sounds that we've been given. Chanda is the beat, what we call in English the prosody. Prosody is the meter of a poem. And as in everything else, it's very highly developed in the Vedic culture, in the Sanskrit culture. In English, because I've done a little dabbling with poetry, maybe some of you remember from your third grade, iambic pentameter, five beats, 5 feet, and the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What does it say? For Krishna and his multitude of friends, a festival of joy each day would bring. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's the beat. And it's nice, because the idea is that the mind is attracted to that, to meter, to rhythm. Prabhupada once asked on a morning walk, I think it was, what is the most basic thing in all that all human beings share, attraction? And everyone, most devotees said the music, in different music. I said, no, it's rhythm. Rhythm is most universal in all cultures. There's some rhythm. And that's because it's here in the original. As described here, there are all these Vedic meters, and he's going to name them in the next verse. I only recognize one name here, the Anushtup. The Anushtup is the standard meter we have. Man manam bhava man bhatto manjaji mam namaskuru mame vaishasi satyamte patijane piyosime. That's the Anushtup meter, also called the Shloka meter, because it's so common. Most of the verses in Bhagavatam, practically all the verses in Gita, are in that meter. 8 syllables per line, like that. But there are many other meters, more involved meters, that are also rhythmic and that help to attract the mind to the Vedic sound. If I dare mention, Hitler understood this. He had some input from the Vedic culture, swastika. He ruined it for the next 10,000 years. Swastika is a Vedic symbol. You know what it means? Yeah, su-asti. Su-asti, may you be well. Be well. That's what su-asti means. And combined comes swasti. Swastastu vishvasya kalakpa. It's in the verse by Prahlad. So the symbol, just like there's these Vedic sounds, there are also symbols that are meant to enliven the mind. Our architecture is so important. We make it such an effort when you actually build a temple. So many of the temples in the West were already built, you know, some house or like this building. But internally, you try to let this form going up, you know, that's there and it's on the altar. That itself exalts the mind. It's peaceful. It takes your mind up. I like to point out an experience I had with architecture. I went to India once year on Bucharest Airlines. I got a good price, but I paid for it. So I had to spend a day and a half in Bucharest. That's Romania, and they had just gotten out of the Eastern Bloc, and the communism had fallen. But the architecture, you know, these impressive big buildings that look like radiators, you know, built by Stalin, you know, it just brings the mind down in the lower, you know, the modes. You really have to fight not to let that affect you. So all these things have an effect. Vastu, we studied, you know, the placement of everything, the orientation, the time. There's a whole subtle culture there. And it all begins with the sound. So the sound is what creates this world, and the proper sound can dissolve this world for us. And that's the vibration of the Vedic sounds, beginning with the holy name of Krishna. And as described earlier, there are these different levels in which the sound vibrates, in which the sound affects us. We won't go into them again, but it involves the different levels within the prana, the senses, and the mind. In other words, there's the life air vibrating, there's also the mind is meant to be focused on the sound, to hear it, and to understand the meaning. The meaning is another very important part of what we vibrate. And then the senses are also working. So on every level, the sounds, the Hare Krishna mantra, and these other vibrations we have, both in Sanskrit and in English, but here we're talking about Sanskrit, are meant to, you know, purify our very being from the bottom up, you know, from the top down, if you will. So how does that work? Well, one of the problems I think that devotees have is that we don't focus enough on the sound and also the meaning. Just like we have the Guru Vashtaka. We're attending this Mangalarti. So let's just think of the first verse and the different levels that we can perceive that and understand it. First is the actual sound. Sangsara dava nalalidha loka. That's the first line, right? So each of those words has a meaning, and the way the Sanskrit is constructed, that's a compound word, and it all goes together. In fact, the compound goes on to the next line with the word tranaya. It's not tranaya, it's tranaya. Study again and again, review, so you get all the longs and shorts right. It's all important. This is all part of the vibration that's going to... But how many levels can we understand that? Well, we can just hear the sound, and we can vibrate the sound. But if we wanted to really go deep into our minds and intelligence and experience it fully, we have to know the meaning. And it's been given. We have the books and so forth. You have to study that. So, sangsara is? Yes? So
birth and death.
Yeah, birth and death. There's life in this material world. Sangsara, going round and around. Dava, anala. Balaram? The forest fire. Fire. So this life in this world is like a forest fire. You know, and if you have a big forest fire, they've been burning for weeks there in Arizona. And here we had a few years ago, you remember these fires? They call them brush fires. But if it's in a big forest, it's even more blazing. And if you're in the middle of it, you're doomed in an ordinary sense. You're doomed. There's no exit. You know, the only hope is somehow a big downpour, you know, put the thing out and rescue you. Right? And that's in this verse. So the first thing is to hear the sound carefully, and it should be creating images in your mind and even feelings. You feel the heat, you know. On what level can you experience that? Sangsara dava nala lidha. Lidha means suffering. You know, who's suffering? Everybody. Loka. Loka means the people. It means two things. It means the planet, like Goloka, and it means the people on the planet. So we're on this planet, and we and everyone else is suffering in this fire of birth and death. Now, the mind can work very quickly. You know, sometimes we can see how quickly the mind can take you away from the Hare Krishna mantra. What happened to that round? You know, I better chant it again. You know, the mind is very, very, you know, versatile. So you know, what are those miseries? How are we suffering? Even just, you know, a little idea of the threefold miseries, birth and death. All of that can be there as you hear that, if your mind is clear and not distracted. Sangsara davanana lila loka tranaya. We're being delivered by the spiritual master. Now immediately, there should awaken an emotion. The appropriate emotion is gratitude. Deep, deep gratitude. If someone actually, you know, is in a helicopter and comes down and saves us, pulls us out of a forest fire, you have a relationship with that person now. You owe them your life. And, you know, there's a deep feeling there. Now, that person is the spiritual master. They're continually saving us. You see, on what level you can experience just that first line of the Gurvashtaka every morning. Tranaya karunya ganaganatvam. So ganaganatvam is this cloud and karunya is mercy. How is that mercy manifesting? You know, by the instructions, by the presence, by the prasadam, by the holy name, by everything. Those thoughts can come just from those first two lines. So the idea is that we're given this great treasure of these Vedic sounds. Everything is, this whole movement is built on a sound. What did Prabhupada do for 12 years? Spoke and sang, basically. He spoke his books, which were then recorded and made into. And he gave so many darshans, gave many classes, morning walks, conversations. He sang bhajans. He taught. He chastised. He praised. All sound. Everything is built on sound, and it's being sustained by sound. This movement is being sustained by sound, as is the material world ultimately. So, how we receive the sound. Mahatattvabhu was mentioning the Upadeshamrita yesterday. And we can just think of those seventh and eighth verses. I remember in the Manhattan Temple. I lived there for a year and a half. The big 11-story Manhattan Temple I had in the 70s. I lived there, and one of the things we did, I think it was after the class, we all sat there and chanted the first eight verses of the Upadeshamrita. Very important, the Upadeshamrita, essence of advice. So, what are those seventh and eighth verses say? So, the seventh verses, those of you know it, Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Sitapya Vidya Pitto Patapta Rasanasya Narochi Kanu Kint Vadanada Nuninankara Saiva Dushta Svadvi Kaman Bhavati Tadgada Mula Hantri. So, what he's saying there is that Syat Krishna's name, Charita, his activities, etc. Name, form, qualities, everything. Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Sita is actually very sweet, very tasty. But although it is very tasty, avidya pittopatapta rasadasya, because of the disease of ignorance, it tastes bitter to us. You know, if you ask somebody to chant Hare Krishna for a minute out on the street, see what happens, you know. If you're lucky to get one Hare Krishna out of them, you know. It doesn't have the taste. They get too many things going on. You know, it's the disease of ignorance. So that's why the mind is wandering, because it doesn't really experience the full sweetness of the name. Madhuram madhurebhyopi. It is the sweetest of the sweet. Everyone knows, you know, normal, you know, if you get a nice sweet, you know, that's nice sandesh or rasgulla, you know, take one, take another. You may take a couple more or 10 more, you know, in your early days. Because the taste is there, although there's going to be a reaction. But imagine if you just keep eating those sweets and there'd be no reaction. The more you, no bad reaction. It just gets sweeter and sweeter and you go back to guided. That would be cool. So that's what the holy name really is. It's the sweetest of the sweet. We have madhura madhura medha, and it's like all our acharyas say. And we experience to some degree that sweetness, much more than the ordinary person out there. Right? Who hasn't even an inkling or has no experience chanting. So we know it's sweet, but there's other things that still we haven't habituated to thinking and tasting other things. So sometimes if the mind is fighting too much, it puts us to sleep. The sleep doesn't come necessarily because you didn't have enough sleep last night. It can come because your mind is fighting the holy name so much that it just shuts down. That's true. That happens. So verse goes on. He says, although it is the sweetest, so sweet, not just the holy name, but everything, activities, pastimes, form, everything. We have this bile of ignorance, so it tastes bitter to us. But just like if you have jaundice, the remedy, one of the remedies, is to keep taking that bitter sugar candy, tastes bitter, until it tastes sweet again. Then you know you're cured. So similarly, he says in this verse, Pitto patapadas rasanasya narochikanu, it doesn't have the taste for us, but kintu adaran, isn't it wonderful? Anadaran, every day, anudinam kalusayava jushta, if you practice chanting, svadri kamad, it becomes tasty to you, bhavati tadgadamula hantri, and the disease of ignorance is destroyed at the root. You see? So that's exactly what's being mentioned here, is that these sounds are very potent. We have them at our disposal. We have Prabhupada chanting. We have so many devotees chanting beautifully. You know, it's there as sound. It's there as, on the printed page. We know what to do. And if we follow this process, although it may be difficult, there's a discipline. That's where the sadhana comes in. Regularly chanting. And you have to give up the offenses. You have to focus the mind. You have to make the effort to hear and chant properly. Then it will regain its sweetness, or more precisely, we will regain the ability to taste the sweetness that's already there. And then he goes on with the essence of all advice, which is text 8. Tan nama rupa charitari sukirtananu smityo karena vasanama nasi niyoja. So here he's saying, and that name, quality and form, tan nama rupa, form, charitari, activities, etc., sukirtananu, chanting very nicely. In other words, hearing those who are chanting purely and then repeating, hearing and chanting very nicely. Smrityo karmena, and in this way, remembering also. If you're hearing and chanting with full attention, then you must remember. They follow one after another. Step by step. Smrityo karmena, manasana manasi niyoja, rasana manasi niyoja, thus engaging the tongue and the mind in this way. Now, then he says, tistan vrajay, one should live in Vrindavan. So he's living in Vrindavan. But it's clear from Prabhupada's own example and from the books that one can also live in Vrindavan internally. If you're always in Krishna consciousness and you're speaking about Krishna, you're hearing about Krishna, wherever you go, you create the Vrindavan mood. The more pure you are, that's what Srila Prabhupada did. That's what these temples are. You create a dham where you go by influence. The great devotees do that. So that's why Advaita Acharya said to Lord Chaitanya, wherever you are, that's Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya wanted to go to Vrindavan when he took sannyasi. Didn't make it right away. Later on, he actually went. And Advaita said, don't worry, you're already in Vrindavan. Wherever you are is Vrindavan. So the idea is, if you're always thinking of Krishna, and you're serving Krishna, and you're regularly hearing his leela, his delightful pastimes in Vrindavan, then you're living there. And more importantly, you're also visible to those who never heard of Vrindavan. You can give others an inkling. You see, this is how the dham spreads. The dham is not different from Krishna. He expands it for his pleasure, you see, all on the basis of sound. So he says, tishtan vajay tananuragi jananugami, and following those who have already developed a taste, anuragi janan, who have an attraction for Krishna. Kalang nayed, spending one's time, all day, spending all one's time. Hearing, chanting, serving, remembering. Kalang akilamityupadesha sadam. This is the essence of all advice. This is the essence of all advice. To become steeped in the sounds describing and enumerating Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And in that purport, Prabhupada quotes from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who describes the different stages of hearing. Just similar to the different stages of being absorbed that the yogis go through. There's dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. You know, they give three stages there. Dharana is concentration, means the effort to concentrate, bringing it back. You know, and then when your mind is fixed, okay, I'm dharana. Then I can proceed to dhyana, actual meditation. And when the meditation is completely absorbed, there's not a slight flickering, just like they describe oil pouring out. You know, what Krishna says, the flame, the unmoving flame, in the you know, that little air, that flame is your mind, you know, steady, thinking of Krishna. That's samadhi. So, but there's a process, and it's related to hearing, your progression in hearing. So, you know, we hear at different levels. If the mind is disturbed, then you can hardly hear anything. Someone may be speaking to you, you didn't hear a word. The sounds may be vibrating in the eardrums, but your mind's a million miles away. That's why, you know, in third grade, he said, "Hey, Tommy, you know, stop daydreaming. And my name is Tom, you know." I was always bored there. So. But anyway, so the same thing happened, the flickering mind. The mind is so powerful, it's going to chanchalam mana Krishna. So you have to bring it back. You know, that's a Hare Krishna, Krishna. It's a struggle. But the more that we during the day, we do things related to Krishna, we keep the mind on Krishna, we sacrifice, the easier it becomes to concentrate. And the easier, and we go into a different level of hearing. You know, it really, you know, Prabhupada, he made it so simple. It's so simple just to hear that holy name. Devotees complain, "I can't concentrate my mind." What does the mind have to do with it? Just chant Hare Krishna and hear. You know, in other words, the mind really needs to just be quieted, so it is a pure medium. Because otherwise, it's like this little pool of water, you know, and there's the moon reflected. Okay, so if you throw a stone in there, all of the waves, you know, start to vibrate, and you don't see the moon distinctly, right? It's all distorted, right? And if you really start chucking in boulders in there, you won't see the moon at all. You'll see bubbles and whatever, you know. So this is our mind in the different modes, you know. We may hear externally the sound of Krishna, but it's not going deep. We're not, you know, it's not really going deep. And to do that, we call it all this sadhana. Everything that we do is meant to improve our chanting. Because after all, it's a chanting of Hare Krishna, both in japa and in kirtan. That will, take us back to Godhead, give us love of Godhead. Read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You'll see, you know, so much of it is about the kirtans. You know, kirtan is the essence of our practice. Why? Because it so quickly overwhelms the different. If you're in a kirtan for any length of time, and you're hearing that the beat, right? The beat is amplified. The drumming is very important. And the sound is vibrant. You have to be affected. And if you're actually practicing Krishna consciousness, there should come a time when you can't stop dancing. You can't just stand there. You know, it's enlivening you, the holy name. You know, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how, you know, it just enters the heart and takes over. And, you know, symptoms come. Krishna appears in that holy name. Such a depth of experience is described. So we should aspire for that. We have to hear about it so that we'll aspire for it. And it's been given to us. You know, the same Hare Krishna mantra. Tunes may be a little different. You know, we're trying to refine our drumming and everything. But all of that is just the enhancement, the actual name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I remember these japa retreats. They have their problems. Main thing is the cost, you know. It's only for the elite, you know, to come up with $1,000. Okay. But, I mean, we have our little retreat every morning. It's a retreat. Don't do anything else. Don't be distracted. Chant the holy name. So, but there's a, you know, there's a progress. We should feel progress. If we're committing offenses, which, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said the mother of all offenses, literally, is inattention. When you're inattentive, you're not feeling, you know, the benefit of the chanting. You're not contacting Krishna, associating with Krishna through his sound, vibration. Then you're prone to make all the other offenses, you know, because the modes are still acting. You know, you may get angry at another devotee, heaven forbid. And then the next time you know, if you've actually offended someone, a devotee, and you sit down to chant, the mind won't let you. You keep thinking of that offense. You know, you think of that devotee, because Krishna is not pleased. He's giving us whatever advancement we make, whatever ability to concentrate, is a gift from Krishna, a gift from Srimati Radharani. In the heart, the mind can be peaceful now. I haven't offended, you know, or I've been forgiven. Now I can chant with peace. So that's some of the things here. I wanted to do a little bit with the meters, since that's kind of my specialty. I don't pretend to know Sanskrit. People assume I know Sanskrit. I never really studied formally the grammar, although learning enough verses, you get a vocabulary. Those of you who have memorized some verses, you know, it gets a little easier. You don't have to, it's like learning any language. You know, after a while you know some of the language, and that helps you learn the rest of the language. But I don't pretend to know all the grammar or any, practically any of it. But still, the meter is kind of is not that difficult to figure out. And I wanted to share with you some of the meters, because these meters also enhance the experience of the mantras. It's like at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, right? We have two verses in what is called Shardulika Vikridita meter. It's so wonderful. They each have names. Every meter has a name. And that name fits into the meter. Shardulika Vikridita. If you look somewhere, you'll see it fits. And what that means is, why, I don't know, but a little baby tiger cub at play. That's the meaning of the meter of the first two. Yeah, right. So, you know, now, if you know what each word of those means, you know, then the whole thing just, it becomes a meditation in and of itself. This is why there's a benefit for learning verses by heart. It helps to learn by heart. Remember, it's a part of the vibration is in the mind, right? The mind level, you know? So when you really know the meaning, then that's that much more absorption of the mind in the mantra. These are also mantras. You can chant them again and again. Prabhupada wanted us to chant, right? Each verse 3, 4, 5, 6 times to really get absorbed, you know? So that's one meter. And you get a lot of information in there, you know, one verse. It's all very concentrated. Sanskrit is very concise. And it's great. I mean, it's a whole meditation on the absolute truth in that one verse. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati spoke on it for months. That's the connection with the Gayatri Mantra. There's so many levels. You know, the Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri. Those last few words, padam dhimahi. When you see that dhimahi, that's a classic word in the Gayatri, those who know Gayatri. So there's all kinds of ways in which it relates to that. There's so many things going on in that first verse. Second verse, same meter. But then in the third verse, the second verse, very important. I don't want to... The third verse, it's a nectar meter, you know? And in one sense, it's really nice because it introduces Bhagavatam. This is a book, you know, it's nectarian mellow. Even the Atmaramas, those who are already satisfied, they want to hear Bhagavatam. Shukadev heard Bhagavatam, even though he was already realized, you see. So what is that verse? So I can see, even though probably a few of you, maybe most of you don't know what it means, but still the meter itself has an attraction, isn't it? So you can imagine. So it's a desire tree. All of the nigamas, the Vedic literature, is like a great desire tree. You can get whatever you want. You want to learn medicine? We have Ayurveda. You want to learn how to build? We got Vastu section. How to fight? We got the Dhanurveda. You know, you want to go to heaven? Okay, Karmakanda, it's there for you. It's like a desire tree of knowledge, you know. So, but the fruit, the ripened fruit of that whole tree is? The Bhagavatam itself. You know, after writing all the other literatures, Vyasadeva was dissatisfied. In chapter 5, we learned Narada Muni came, so you write Bhagavatam. The ripened fruit of the Vedas and of the mature fruit of his intelligence, you know, Veda Vyasa. The Gamakalbatado Galitam Palam. It's ripened fruit. Galitam Palam. Shuka Mukad. Who can guess what that means? Who's Shuka? Bhishma. Who's Shuka here? Shukadeva Goswami. It also means parrot. So the parrot, it is said, I haven't experienced this, but it seems to be common knowledge in certain places. When he pecks a fruit, it becomes sweeter. And so Shukadeva Goswami heard from his father, but he added his own poetic ability to it. So the Bhagavatam became even sweeter. I'll give you a few samples of some of these sweet verses. We're running out of time, I know. But this is practically the only verse in the Bhagavatam where I can wail on some of these shlokas and part of this, what he's speaking about. So, Shukam Muktara Mitada Vasamyutam, and because he did, which is coming from, it's full of nectar, Amita Dravasamyutam, and Prabhupada's immortal definition of that Dravasamyutam means semi-soft and easily swallowable. like a mango that's so ripe that you drink it. Have you ever seen you cut it open and you got to drink that? You know, that's the Bhagavatam. Semi-soft and easily swallowable. Just have to So he goes on, you know, he said, drink it, Pibhata Bhagavatam. It's an imperative. All of us, drink it, you drink it. Pibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, full of rasa, juice, and rasa means the mellow taste, relationship. Even past liberation, liberation is nothing. Rasamali Mohoraho, again and again, every day. Aho Rasika Abhuvibhava, and become a Rasika. Rasika means one who drinks liquid, or it means one who tastes in relation with Krishna. So he goes on. So just a sample of some of these different meters. The gopis, you know, the gopis are simple ladies, milkmaids, you know, but they're the greatest scholars, really, in loving Krishna. And he puts these beautiful shlokas in their mouth, in Shukadeva Goswami describes, in their geets, their different songs, in separation from Krishna. So one is, we're working on, you know, chapter 35, probably, you know, the gopis sing of Krishna as he wanders in the forest. I gave it that little title, chapter 35. It's a little bit of a poem in itself. The gopis sing of Krishna as he wanders in the forest. And what do they sing? Vama bama kata vama kapolo pulgita budadada patavina komalanga di badashita maga gopi iri yati yata mukunda. So, okay, the meaning. You see why it's so important to study this, the meanings. Vama bahu, left shoulder. Krita vama kapolo, placed on the left cheek. So how could that be? He's holding a flute, like this. Big flute. I'm a flute player. Vama bhakata vama volgita on his delicate cheeks, moving his eyebrows very attractively. Volgita brur. You see the depth of these verses. There's so much in there. They're meant to evoke pictures, experiences, emotions. Adar apatavenam. He's placed it to his lips. Naturally, he's playing. And when he plays, it goes throughout the universe. The demigods' wives hear it in the plains, and they want to come down and hear more. And they get attracted to Krishna, just like the gopis. So the gopis are saying this verse. Anyway, it goes on like that's 1 meter. Another one we were doing on our long bhajan kutir ride back from in the desert, hours and hours of shlokas, and practically the last verse of the 10th canto is the nectar verse. We had this verse pasted on the wall in the ashram where I woke up. Prabhupada said we should chant this when we get up. Okay, I'm sorry. So he says, Jayatu janani vaso devaki janmavaro yadavada parishatsvaya dhorbarasyanna dharma. So this is a summary description of Krishna in this beautiful nectar verse. So anyway, there's all these different meters and meanings and sound vibrations. And if we take shelter of them, beginning with Hare Krishna, which also has its own meter, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, we will be purified. And become attracted to Krishna, attain pure love for Krishna. Any one question or two? I'm sorry, we've gone over. Sorry to stop. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.